The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Welcome back to another Mission Minded Michael Coleman. He is the CEO of the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. They do wonderful work down there in the great city of Montgomery, of course, our title city down there. They cover 35 counties in the great state of Alabama by feeding, how many, 25.3 million meals? What is it? I mean, every time I hear it, it's like, just by, I tell people that, I was like, you know what they do down there? They're like 23.6 million meals last year. And they're like, what? They're like, how is that even possible?
No, it's crazy. We're on pace this year to close out. Our fiscal year ends in June. We're on pace for 30 million pounds. And then you would divide that one by two, 1.2 pounds per meal is how calculate that.
That is crazy.
So 26 million meals.
Has that poundage changed over? I know our weight has changed. I don't know.
I've only been in this game a few years now, but it's lots of times it's like, we just got through with our audit. It's very difficult because we have a warehouse full of food and we have to determine a dollar value. Yeah, we don't know the price of this. So we have to end up coming up. So Feeding America actually does it for us. And they have calculated $1.79 for every pound. Okay. And so we have to figure up our total pounds that we have in and then convert that over.
That is really interesting because you think we're eating more than we used to. And I just wonder if you would look at the numbers from like the 70s and 80s, is there more poundage per box than there was back in that?
Well, so there wasn't even food banking, but food banking is true. I think back in the late 60s was when a man invented it out of Arizona. And that's why it's called a bank, is because it's the whole concept of, hey, you know, everybody's going to store some food somewhere, like put it away, and then people who need it can withdraw it. I mean, that's how, and then it just kind of stuck with it. And it hadn't been around. I mean, it's fairly new over the last 50 years or
so. Kind of amazing, really is, because it's obviously been something that you would think that certainly after the Great Depression, soup lines and things like that. I know there's a lot of different things that actually go into that. Before we get into your topic again, and it's about changing your mind. I love this topic because we're in this thing called an election year, in case you're just waking up the last 3 years. And I think it's amazing whenever you have someone that used to be a Republican that's now a Democrat, or used to be a Democrat that's now a Republican. It's like, turn the lights off. I want to hear that story. I want to hear how they changed and how they're looked upon. And it's just a great story. So I'm going to get into that, but I saw a commercial last night on television about it's a kid eating, talking about bananas. What's the, just one apple and bananas. He's singing the apples and banana song. Uh-huh. And I'm thinking, this has got to be something for a food bank. And of course it is. He's looking at the refrigerator. There's nothing to eat. And then of course at the end, it says 1 in 6 children in the state of Alabama have issues, you know, eating enough food. So I asked my daughter, we were sitting on the couch and she heard that song and she looked up and I said, let me ask you something. I said, do you have any friends of yours that are hungry? And she said, what do you mean? I said, like hungry, hungry. She goes, oh, my friends are always hungry. I said, well, you're 11 years old. 12-year-old girls, they get hungry. I mean, at that age, everyone's hungry, hungry 24 hours a day. She had a dinner last night at 6:30, 7:30. We got home and she wanted to eat again. And I was like, no, I'm talking about actually hunger. Like they're really, she goes, that's really interesting that you brought that up. She goes, because, you know, normally you pack me a snack. And I'm not supposed to pack snacks, but I always do because I know how kids are. I know we're in a snack society. You and me didn't have snacks. When we went over to a friend's house, we didn't ask for snacks. You didn't ask for snacks. You got water from the hose. That was it. You know,
that's right.
But whenever my friends come over, my buddy's friends come over, my son's friends, they're going through my refrigerator. They're eating my leftovers. Oh, yeah. It's like,
helps themselves.
Yeah, they do. And so she said, no, it's really interesting because she goes, like a group of three or four girls that every morning, the first thing they do when they see me, they see if I get here early. And second of all, they see what I brought as my snack. And I said, do they bring snacks? She said, no. And they always ask me if they can have my snacks. And so I usually give it to them. And I said, oh, she goes, are you mad with me? I said, no, I'm not mad at you. I said, that's fine. She goes, I said, really? And I said, that's just really interesting that you know, think about that for a second. And it kind of ripped my heart out a little bit and made her see. She's like, oh my gosh, my friends are hungry.
And you never even think about it because it's not your experience. So you wouldn't think.
I thought maybe they just didn't have time to eat breakfast in the morning. Or maybe maybe their parents don't have breakfast in the morning. They're like, you'll be fine. Just get something to eat at school. You know, just get them out. You know, you'll find something there. But can you just briefly talk about that? Because what I had heard 1 in 5. I think we talked about it on the show, but 1 in 6. But it's when you talk about hunger, what are you talking about? You're talking about they're not getting the nutritional value they need at their age, correct?
Yeah. So it's, so many kids look at, and it's interesting we're talking about changing their mind because I actually had a different opinion of the whole school meal programs many years ago. I would say 30 years ago, my view was completely different on this. Like, why is government getting involved in feeding families? If you can't feed your family, you shouldn't have kids, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I took a very black and white hard line on that. When you have a situation like there's so many kids who eat breakfast and lunch at school. And in Alabama, you can actually even get a supper meal as long as it's tied to educational enrichment. The problem is that there's too many kids who go home at night to literally, and then there's nothing that I see that I want to eat. There's literally nothing to eat. And they don't get their next meal until the next morning. And so the problem with that is you don't come in typically as a child and you're embarrassed by it. Mm-hmm. You know that you're different than other people. So you don't come in and just open up about that. So anything that you're ashamed about, you kind of keep that with close to the vest. You might tell a close friend. But you see it manifest itself in ways like you're hanging around people and you're like, oh, that looks really good. Or if they ever say, you know, hey, would you like some of my sandwich or something? You never turn it down. Mm-hmm. And it's because you're just not getting enough. So there's some that where you don't have any. And then there's some that are living in food insecure areas where they can't get the regular nutrients they need. So they might be getting food, but it's a lot from the nearest package store or not package, what you call it, liquor store, package store, but where you got a lot of boxed items, a lot of crackers and cookies, a lot of preservatives, things like that, not fresh, nutritious, prepared food that your body needs. And it's because of the availability. We live in such rural areas in Alabama. Sometimes you have to go 30 miles. Well, if you can't make ends meet, you can't spend the gas money to go 30 miles to get that food. And so there's just not an availability. And the people who end up suffering are the kids, regardless what you could say, well, the parents shouldn't do this. Parents should, you know, all that kind of stuff. And maybe there's some legitimate points in that individually. But the bottom line is kids are not asked what environment they're to be born in.
Yeah.
They just have to deal with what they face. And we know for a fact that food insecurity, not having enough healthy food and not having enough good food or proper food is a cause for child trauma. Mm-hmm. And that bleeds on into adulthood. And it affects your mind, the development of your mind, your mental aspects, your physical, all of that. We just don't understand how important enough food is for kids. And if it can't be provided, I think we all agree that we want. Yeah. OK, so let's say there's some blame for parents. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is, do we want the children to suffer? And I think when we break it all down, we don't want to live in a society like that. We want to care for our neighbors and provide for our kids. And it's just an incredible challenge.
If you, if you're a good neighbor, depending on what your social economic situation is, where you live, what part of town you're in, what you do for a living, you usually know your neighbors probably within two or three doors down, I would think, in either direction. And, what are some of the signs, or are you taught as the CEO of the Heart of Alabama Food Bank, are you taught the signs to look for in someone that you think is not getting the proper nutrition they should get for them and their kids or their family? And I can even throw that out. Do you feel like it's your responsibility to be looking for that? There's a lot of places you just said it. They're embarrassed.
Yeah.
They don't want to ask for, they don't want to ask for help. They want to ask for food. I've got one particular friend of mine that used to be a neighbor that was married, had three children. And whenever I would go out and cook something, I would usually always have a little extra. And I would just bring it over because we weren't going to eat it. My kids don't like to eat leftovers. And it's a first world problem, right? We don't eat leftovers. Like that's pathetic.
Right.
That's pathetic. We have people out there that don't have enough food to eat and you won't eat leftovers. But I would take some over, whether it be ribs or whether it be, sometimes you do a huge Boston butt, you're not going to finish it all. And so, and he really would appreciate it. And then I got to the point where I realized that most of the times that was their meal for the day.
Yeah.
And it was a friend of mine and I would talk to him. He was working a regular job, didn't realize. And you know, the only reason I know that he was having a hard time was because the power company was out. They cut his power off and, you know, it was the old, oh, I must have forgot to pay my power bill. We've all been there. Certainly, hopefully not in your 40s and 50s, but maybe in your teens, your 20s. Is there anything you look for? Is there something you feel like as a Christian that you need to do in that particular case? Because most cases you will find out someone's life by talking with them on a regular basis, primarily being neighbors, because you get to know your neighbors and some of the intricacies of what they go through on a daily basis. But what's your feelings on that? It's as opposed to seeing a guy, a homeless man underneath an over ramp, which you are a part of too, because you work for the Jimmy Hell Mission. But from a responsibility standpoint, where's that land for you?
Well, sometimes it can be very tough, especially when people, it's the first time. If you find yourself, I always revert back to my mind of the couple who both have worked their entire life and they're 60 years old, and one of the spouses gets cancer and can no longer work, is going through treatment and needs full-time care, but the husband can't afford it. So the husband quits his job to stay at home and take care of the wife. And so for the first time, they work their entire lives, but for the first time, they find themselves in a food line asking for assistance. That's incredibly degrading to them because they never would have imagined things would be so bad. They need to be in a food line asking for support. And so it's not people, I don't think, understand if you grow up in generational poverty and maybe you're used to getting assistance, there's not a stigma there. So people think, oh, well, people are just perpetuating dependency. They don't care anymore. They're not embarrassed to stand in line. I don't want people to be embarrassed to stand in the line because the vast majority of people are people who are working. Over 70% of those who are standing in a food line are people who are currently employed but can't make ends meet. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not going to spend my time trying to root out 2 out of every 10 people who might be in a perpetual dependency state. And who's to say I'm not going to take care of them either, because I don't know all their circumstances and all what's led up to that. And that kind of leads into our topic, which is just kind of how my views have changed. And my views have changed, kind of the source of this whole topic that we're leading in, is because I had to realize, wait a minute, I'm encountering new facts. And when I've encountered new, if I'm going to be an intellectually honest person, then that means when I acquire new facts, I have to then add those to my experience or through the lens by which I filter information. And wherever that leads me, then I think to be intellectually honest, I have to go. Now, I will tell you, I grew up in a conservative household, a divided household. My mother and father divorced very early, but they were both very conservative. My mother was very compassionate. My dad was less so. He would tell you, I vote 2 issues, guns and taxes. That's all I care about. Tell me where you're on guns and taxes. You try to take my guns or try to take my money. Sure. I'm not voting, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So I grew up in that. And so I grew up typically voting Republican, because that was just the side of the aisle that I filtered everything through that. And when I was in my 20s, everything was black and white. And I remember saying, when an issue would come up, I would not budge to look at that issue through fresh eyes. I would look at it and go, okay, what should I as a Republican believe about this issue?
Yeah.
You know?
I hear you.
And so what ends up happening is I twist the issue to fit within my political purview. Now, the Democrats are just as guilty as Republicans. I mean, this is not a one party problem. This is a societal problem. And it's not just within political. We do it in terms of how we look at faith and our perspectives on God, everything. I mean, just all aspects of our life and our society. But what I began to learn was, is that, you know, when I'm looking at black and white and I'm looking at a policy and I'm like, look at how much money we're spending. Yep, we need to slash welfare. We need to slash food stamps. We need to slash this, slash that. And then I get knee deep in it. It becomes my life. Mm-hmm. And then I begin to see all these shades of gray that I'm not in a black and white world, because I'm like, okay, I'm faced with the humanity and all the things that are going on in that individual's life, most of which are a result. You could say, yes, well, they're making choices. Yes, that's true. They have made some bad choices. But the trauma by which they've come out of, they have not been properly equipped to make good choices. And the truth of the matter is, we as a middle-class society, I talk about this all the time, we as a middle-class society make as many bad choices as people in poverty. The difference is that when we crash and fall, there's typically a soft landing.
Yep.
Because we have family who prop us up as we navigate adolescence and early adulthood until we pull our head out of our rectum and we start making better choices. And that takes a little bit of age, a little bit of experience. Well, we're kind of being propped up. Now, imagine if that the people propping us up did not exist. Nope. Well, that's what's happening oftentimes in poverty. They're making the same bad choices, but it's amplified when you do it in poverty because there's not a support system. The only support system they have are governmental support systems. We don't care about that as much in the middle class, because it's not something we've depended on, not because we haven't needed support systems. Mm-hmm. It's that our support systems have come internally from family. And so it's really caused me to say, look, if I want to be, and when I'm honest, I've got to look at it and say, what is the right thing? And then change my view and not feel like I'm a hypocrite or waffling. I remember when I went through a stage of pastoral ministry that I was involved in, and I remember getting up and preaching. And when I was coming to terms with this, and this was 20 years ago, I was coming to terms with this very issue. And I remember standing up and preaching to the audience, and I said, I'm telling y'all something right now, is that everything I'm telling you today, I believe 100%. But I'm almost 100% sure that in 5 years, I would not preach this same sermon.
You said
because
that.
In 5 years,
yeah.
I'm going to grow close. My goal is to grow closer to God in my through faith. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have more experiences with those who are suffering in the world. It's going to shape my viewpoint. And so it's going to help me better understand how I need to, my perspectives and my life needs to change for the benefit of others. Now, that caused some people to cringe because they're like, no, we have the truth. We know the truth. We're sticking with the truth. And I'm like, yes, I don't think anything's going to change my view overall that God exists and that my views on scripture and things like that. But inside of that, I continue to grow. I'm now 58. I continue to grow when I read, because I've recognized that it's okay to change. It's necessary that you literally cannot grow without change, both physically, emotionally. And that means we have to sometimes abandon and have the courage to abandon concepts that we now know are false rather than trying to mold a concept to fit our comfort zone and our view.
Well, and you know, according to this article, and it's a great article, you know, talk about people that change their minds can be looked upon as wishy-washy. You can be looked upon as a hypocrite. It really kind of depends, I think, on when you're changing your mind and what you're changing your mind on. I think it's really fascinating because there are some things that, quite frankly, there is no budge.
Right.
Moralistic issues like abortion. Maybe gun control. So some of our bigger issues are things like, I'm not changing my mind. This is the way I feel. And you're not going to get me to change my mind. So don't even come talk to me about that. And or a political party. I heard NPR this morning, and they were talking to a couple of a Democrat and a Republican out of Michigan who had flipped over the last two elections, and were asking why they voted for Trump or why they voted for Biden or why they voted for Clinton and what made them want to change this cycle around. And I thought it was fascinating just to hear someone actually admit that you are willing to change political affiliation. Because, and it drives people crazy. I have voted Democrat twice and I voted Republican twice in the last four elections. And people just don't get that. They're like, I have to look at each in situation. Yeah. My dad was conservative, red to the bone, was big time conservative Republican in Ohio, which is a Republican state. And it didn't matter who was running. He was going to go straight Republican. I remember hearing those words, straight Republican. I always thought straight Republican was a person that was not gay, who was conservative, because they said they were straight Republican. Oh, you mean you're not gay?
Yeah.
No. I mean, yeah. I'm voting straight Republican. So he didn't even have to look at the issues. It was just market.
Whoever's the Republican I'm voting for. Yeah.
And it'd be interesting to see how many people in this country do that. Because and I understand they have the conservative beliefs and from a platform standpoint, an agenda standpoint, what that party stands for. But I also think that our parties have changed for what they stand for a lot over just say the last couple of elections.
Well, and they're not monolithic in their view. I will tell you one of the things, especially when you roll in faith, you got faith and politics mixed together. It gets messy in a hurry. Yeah. But at risk of going there, what you tend to have is if you have a middle class, predominantly white culture at a church, they're typically going to lean more conservative and pro-life. And I've heard people in that group, of which I've been many times, say, I don't see how you could be a Democrat, i.e. pro-choice, mm-hmm. and be a Christian, be saved. Now, let's say back in my 20s, I might even have had that view because it's like us against them. It's black and white. You're for us or against us.
Yeah.
When I started working in poverty, primarily, even though there's all races that reside in poverty, but primarily in African-American communities, what I started noticing is what you see a lot in their churches is the issue of justice. And the Bible is saturated with God's concern of oppression of the poor, of caring for those, caring for your neighbors, feeding one another, you know, being a blessing, not being, matter of fact, there's this old Jewish law about you're only able to glean your field one time because you weren't able to go back through it legally. As a Jew, you were supposed to leave that, as a Hebrew, you were supposed to leave that for the poor to go through and pick up whatever remnants were there. That was, I mean, it was just built in that you had a responsibility to take care of the poor.
Yeah.
And so I get it that when you have gone through the civil rights movement and then all the challenges of the past where you were prohibited from voting, you didn't have any representation in politics and police force, all that kind of stuff, all the abuses during Martin Luther King, I understand why justice is a big deal. And so they say, well, wait a minute. I get that you're pro-life. We're not necessarily pro-choice, but we're Democrats because Democrats, at least stereotypically, are concerned more about the justice issue. And that affects this population just like over here. But where we get in our own sides. And so we're like, okay, well, if I'm going to be white Republican, and it's the same thing. 90% of African Americans vote Democrat.
Sure.
So it's the same problem is where they get stuck. Well, I'm going to vote Democrat no matter what. And it's because we will not be honest enough with ourselves to look at what's going on and say, is this the right thing? And form our opinions, not based on what people are feeding us, but based on our own ethics, and to do, if it's faith-based, to do what we believe God is leading us to do, even if that. And so I've stepped away very clearly from the Republican Party. It doesn't mean I never vote Republican. It doesn't mean I wouldn't vote Democrat. I consider myself independent, but I remember Rush Limbaugh. He used to try, oh, if you're moderate, you're nothing. Mm-hmm. And he made compromise a bad word. If you compromised, and yet I even look at Ronald Reagan, who used to say, look, if I can get 70% of what I'm fighting for, I'll take it. I'll give up the 30%. I'm going to plant my flag there, and I'm going to fight for the other 30% at a later date.
No.
But he could do that because he knew the art of compromising. And you think about it. Right now, we live in, and it's on, again, on both sides. Both parties want 100% or nothing. I want it all my way or not. So if they don't come to the table going, okay, here's what I've absolutely got to have. You tell me what you absolutely got to have, and then let's set that aside. And then now we're just negotiating with the space that's left. Because if you think about it, one of the core principles of Christianity is pursuing peace. And peace requires reconciliation. It requires negotiating. It requires humility to not say that I have all the answers or that it's my way or the highway. And so the rigidness that you see in the parties today are really antithetical to what I believe God has called us to be in our world.
All right, I want you to do some homework. And people are listening out there, info@tonycurryradio.net. I want to get some emails from you fine folks out there. Listen to the show. Of course, it's on 5 days a week here in the TKR app. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, we're available everywhere. And right here on our YouTube channel, he's Michael Coleman. He's the CEO of the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. I'm Tony Curry. So I want you to all think, we'll pick this up next week because we could go, I think, a few weeks on this. But what was the last thing that you changed your mind on that was kind of a life-changing kind of thing? And then I want you to go back and I want you to think about what made you change your mind. At what age were you when that thing, it could have been just last week. And I'll use this as an example. I used to hate red beets. I don't know what it was about red beets, I only found out once I went through therapy. I was trying to figure out why in the world I didn't like red beets. And then at one point in my 30s, I absolutely love red beets. And I will share with you why. And that's not life-changing stuff. But for me, it really, but I vividly remember that. Oh, that's why. I mean, it would make me gag to even think about red beet. Now I love red beets. I'll tell you why I had the feeling, but things that you've changed your mind over, I want you to think about that and how this country can learn by trying to at least see the other side, debate the other side, and be willing to listen. You know, a lot of this article is about be willing. This goes from a biblical standpoint. Jesus just asked us to be willing to open our minds and our hearts and our brains and our ears to the other side, just so we can hear a little bit of the other side. So at least we kind of get an understanding, as opposed to going, nope, if you're a Democrat, I'm not having dinner with you tonight. But I want you to think about that. And the listeners out there, please send us your emails, info@tonycurryradio.net, and tell us how you could change. And maybe we can get you to see the other side before we go voting. Of course, we're doing the show here on a Super Tuesday. So we're actually doing the show here on March 5th. So we'll get out there and vote. And that's a good way of changing your mind right there. You can go ahead and change your vote today. So do that right here. Mission Minded on Tony Curry Radio.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.